ओम ज्ञानति निरंधस्य ज्ञानं जन शलाकय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः.
The devotee of the Lord is greater than any person in the material world. Connection with the pure devotees, genuine connection with the pure devotee, is better than any opulence, and even better than being good in a worldly sense. Sometimes people become surprised when I say that even a neophyte devotee chanting or attempting to chant the holy names is far more saintly than Mother Teresa of Calcutta. People become surprised because, I'm giving the example of Mother Teresa, but it could be any number of such welfare workers, because she exhibited qualities of compassion, caring for others, a life of self-sacrifice, devotion to God. Whereas a neophyte devotee, even though he's chanting the holy names, may be seen to be still selfish in behavior, not showing many symptoms of spiritual advancement. But actually chanting the holy names of the Lord in connection with a bona fide sampradaya is in itself a symptom of advancement. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, well, what is my praman? On what basis can I make this outrageous statement? It's actually not outrageous. It's outrageous. It's outrageous to say that Mother Teresa is more of a saint than even the most neophyte devotee in the bona fide parampara. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stated that the neophyte devotee ringing the bell in the temple during the arati of the Lord thereby renders far more beneficial service, both materially and spiritually, to human society than do persons who open hundreds of schools and hospitals and engage in similar activities meant for the uplift of people. But how is that possible? That's why people often criticize our movement, that what are you actually doing to help people? Why don't you do something practical to help people, like opening schools and hospitals? What's the use of just staying in the temple and ringing the bell? But according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, ringing the bell in the arati, which is cited as, that's often cited as an example of what a neophyte thinks very important, that they just ring the bell and they don't do much else. Ding, 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 ding. It's not considered very advanced, that there's much more important service to do. Krishna. Not that ringing the bell should not go on. Ringing the bell is also part of service to Krishna. But if our understanding of and activities in bhakti don't go much beyond ringing the bell, then it's not a very developed platform. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that even this neophyte conception that bhakti means ringing the bell and not much else, even that it's actually more beneficial to human society than opening millions of hospitals and schools. Well, why is that? Because opening hospitals and schools doesn't actually ultimately benefit anyone. Opening hospitals and schools is only for the benefit of the body. Maybe in this country you don't fully understand this example of opening hospitals and schools, because for almost 100 years the government has overseen the healthcare, has developed the healthcare system and the educational system, so hospitals and schools, all these facilities are there for everyone, provided by the government. Yeah, please don't keep the Srimad Bhagavatam on the floor, or even that close to the floor. But in India, even up till now, although theoretically the government is supposed to or does supply such services, practically any quality healthcare or education is provided by, it's mostly provided by private institutions set up by individual philanthropists. Philanthropists or businessmen. In the Vedic culture, there's a simplified government. The government doesn't directly get involved in education or healthcare. The brahmanas, they provide education. Extensively for brahmanas academic education is extensively for brahmanas, which is a few people. And practical, worldly education in their profession is provided for kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras. And for brahmanas also, there's practical education, how to perform samskars, how to perform yajnas, how to do puja. But for brahmanas, there's more emphasis on the academic, studying the Veda, less so for the kshatriyas, and even less so for the vaishyas. And for the shudras, there's no such education at all, but there's practical education in their occupation. And they can also hear the Puranas. And the health service also is, in Vedic society, is also largely looked after by the brahmanas and other classes of vaidyas, or certain brahmanas and certain vaidyas, which means the doctors. So there's very little need for the government to get involved in that at all. So India is transformed from traditional culture to modern culture. But during that transformation, not all the bits and pieces have been put in place. So the government is supposed to provide education for all, which is part of the modern culture that still hasn't fully come to India, by a long way. It's coming in now, gradually. And hospitals, I'm not aware of hospitals in traditional Vedic culture anyway, which suggests that by following basic rules of hygiene, as people didn't get sick so much, and most, all minor ailments were able, just at home people could treat with herbs, or diet, or fasting, or whatever. So there were no more serious treatment that might be done at home, or maybe. I don't know of any record of hospitals as such. So the idea has come up in modern India that now that schools and hospitals are needed, that anyone who builds that is a great philanthropist, and that is considered a highly charitable and socially beneficial act. And the sick is widely lauded as a greatly saintly person. Although in Calcutta itself and in India in general, not that much interest in her.
In her?
In her, yeah. People are not crazy about her. It's interesting that Mother Teresa is so much praised, but someone else intimately connected with Calcutta, who we all know very well, people in general don't recognize his greatness. We are, of course, speaking of... It's also interesting that Mother Teresa spent her whole life in Calcutta, which is, you know, she could not but have heard Kirtan and of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but she took no interest in it. And though her life was dedicated to God, she made the same mistake as millions of Christians have made, of thinking that Jesus is directly God, which is actually an offense to God, to equate a jiva with God, even one as powerful as Jesus. And she was interested to convert people from Hinduism to Christianity. She was, her aim was to, that if people were chanting the names of Gauranga, she would have them stop doing that and start to go to church and eat beef. So, did she actually benefit anybody? By looking after the body, mistaking the body for the self, which is another cardinal mistake of Christianity, she wasn't able to actually benefit anybody. Now, the neophyte devotee is ringing the bell. Neophyte means he doesn't have much knowledge. He may have so many misconceptions. Neophyte means materially attached, but some beginning of purpose. But because somehow or other he's connected with Krishna, who actually is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that is more beneficial materially, spiritually, and even materially than any other activity. Because actually the link of those who, even though they are apparently worshipping God, but they have no idea who He is or what satisfies Him, their link to Him, however strong it may seem, is tenuous. It's doubtful and not very strong. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone who, even though they don't really know who Krishna is, and they might not even be that much interested, because they're neophytes, neophyte means Prakriti Bhakti, they're materially interested. Mm-hmm. Somehow or other, because they are in contact with the real person, that is for their actual benefit. Now, one does not get the same benefit by ringing the bell in the temple of Durga. The mentality may be practically the same. One enters the temple of Durga and has no clear idea about religion or what the purpose of life is, and may not be even very interested in any philosophical understanding, but has a vague idea that there's something here, some god, or who can help me in my quest for material improvement. So he may have the same concept in the temple of Durga and in the concept of Krishna. And in general Hinduism, that's the concept, that all the gods are the same, all the temples are the same. Some days later go to the Krishna temple and ring the bell. May also go to the church and ring the bell. Mm-hmm. On more than one occasion, Srila Prabhupada was asked, who is in a better position? Those who worship God by the Christian faith, which is fiercely monolithic, or those who are Hindus or worshippers of, specifically he was asked about worshippers of Durga, who are within of Kali, actually, the worshippers of Kali, who is the terrible aspect of Durga, and the worshippers of Kali, they eat meat. So who's in a better position? Because they are within the Vedic culture. Many years ago in Bangladesh, a Hindu social worker was praising us that, oh, you're doing such great work here in Bangladesh. There's a social worker. Social come political worker. His particular interest was to stop the conversion of Hindus into Christians and Muslims. It's clearly what his being Hare Krishna. The tendency of Hindus to convert into another religion is stopped. The dancing white elephants, as Srila Prabhupada called them, the Western devotees in India and Bangladesh, they're just seeing them, it has a tremendous effect on the local population. So in discussing with this social worker, we teased him. We said, well, what's the benefit if they remain Hindus? The Hindus, they're mostly eating flesh and they smoke, and so what difference does it make if they convert to a Christian or a Muslim? The Hindus, they don't go to the temple very much, but the Muslims do their namaz 5 times a day, and the Christians go to church on Sunday. The Hindus, they don't know anything about their own scriptures, but if they become Muslims or Christians, they're both very serious about educating their congregation in their scriptures, in the Quran and the Bible. So this social worker offered various arguments, and we parried them. But eventually we accepted one proposition of his, by which we agreed that it's better that Hindus remain Hindus and not become Christians or Muslims. He said that if they remain Hindus, they're much more likely to say the name of Gauranga than if they are Muslims or Christians. Because in Bangladesh, Hindus at least, actually everyone, they know the name of Gauranga. So the benefit of that, saying the name of Gauranga, especially with some kind of faith, even if it's not very Shastric faith or very knowledgeable faith, that is of such tremendous value to the jiva that it outweighs all other kinds of approaches to God. A major tactic is to blaspheme Krishna and Rama and all the Vedic gods. That Krishna, he's an adulterer. They're not very intelligent in their way of thinking. Then you could ask them, well, why do you say Krishna is an adulterer? And they would, Rasputnika. Is that how the name Rasputin comes? Oh, I learned something today. which way does it come? It comes from Rasputin, or he was called that because he was like that? So that was just by chance, or are the two things just coincidence? So then they would have to answer, well, in the Bhagavatam, it states about Krishna dancing with Vrajavadhu, the married women of Vrindavan. So then we could answer them that, well, if you accept from Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna exists and that he danced with the gopis, then you should also accept the Bhagavatam version that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that the gopis are fully spiritual beings, and that there's no tejiya sangha doshaya, there's no fault in him being such a powerful person. Unfortunately, people in the... Even though Srila Prabhupada wanted to, by distributing these books and constantly speaking Bhagavad philosophy, he wanted to introduce the culture of Bhagavad philosophy. Even the even big professors in the universities, they're often stupid, actually, in terms of actual philosophical understanding. As Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, giving the example of Professor Kotovsky of Moscow, who Prabhupada often quoted him saying that, Swamiji, when the body is finished, everything is finished. Stating it as if it's an axiomatic fact which required no further discussion, or there's just, yeah, just like an axiom, like, you know, Moscow is the capital of Russia or something like that, like an established fact. So I was giving that example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saying that the neophyte devotee ringing the bell in the temple performs more beneficial activities both spiritually and even materially than others might do by opening millions of schools and hospitals. It certainly might seem like an outrageous statement. It may seem shocking to us. But it prompts us to consider deeply why he says that. And not just consider why, but hear from him why. Hear from him for us means hear from Srila Prabhupada, who is the non-different from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That even materially we cannot actually benefit society fully or in the best manner without the blessings of the Supreme Lord. Without the blessings of the Supreme Lord. Support of the whole modern civilization has developed on the idea of progress and advancement. But they don't know the simple formula. Yasmin tushte jagat tushta. That if Krishna is satisfied, then the whole world is satisfied. So if we simply try to satisfy Krishna, then material prosperity will follow. This is not exactly like the Protestant ethic on which the modern capitalism is founded. Favor upon someone is that he's rich, and if you're poor, that's a sign of being impious. Poverty is a horrible condition in the modern age, especially. But in Vedic India, poverty means you don't have anything more than you need, or you don't have anything. But food is there. by the grace of God, Shukadeva Goswami would visit householders' homes and take milk, or the forests. In the forest there are fruits and roots. And in a warmer climate, to have a house is not actually required for, it's not a bodily necessity. There are hundreds of thousands of sadhus even today who wander around India without any home. January, we were sleeping inside, it was very cold. Very cold means not Russia cold, but just maybe a few degrees above zero Celsius. But we saw that next to the, what's that called? Panchakam. I can't remember the name. That Brahma Sarovar. There was like a balcony or a covering so that three sides were closed and one side was open to the air. And underneath that, dozens of sadhus were sleeping, just covered by a blanket. Yeah, a few dozen. So pretty austere, huh? So that point I was making that by the blessings of Krishna, Mother Nature will provide so much opulence if we simply cooperate with the Supreme Lord's plan. The Muslim, first of all, the Muslim invaders overland, and then by sea from Europe, from France, Holland, England, Portugal, all these different countries. So many people were coming from the West to exploit India, not with factories, but to the extent that they were following their culture, still there was so much, like that jewels, silk, so people had so much milk products. One man told me that in his childhood, that was in East Bengal, now Bangladesh, that there was no such thing as selling milk in the villages, because everyone had plenty of milk. And if for any reason, like there was a special family function or something, one needed more, he'd just ask someone and they'd give, that's all. The devotee is more glorified than any materialist, simply by taking the devotional service. Because one pleases Krishna, one is properly situated. It is better than becoming a great learned brahmana or king of heaven, as is mentioned here, or in terms that we in our present situation could maybe better understand, better than becoming a big businessman or a big welfare worker or anything else. Now, one can of course be a great learned scholar, a great welfare worker, and a great businessman in the service of Krishna, without which everything else is useless. There may be various degrees of uselessness. I mean, some things are just useless, and some things are positively harmful. Actually, everything useless is harmful. Just like we may say, modern scientific education is useless. But it's not only useless, it's harmful, because it gives atheistic ideas. Now, if one takes that knowledge and uses it in the service of Krishna, of course you can't support Darwin's theory, but then it could become useful. But if one uses one's scientific training to prove or to demonstrate the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the perfection of one's scientific training. But even without such scientific training, even if one is not at all educated, but he simply accepts Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and chants Hare Krishna, such a person is very dear to Krishna. And of course, very great welfare work is distributing knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Anarto pashamam sakshat bhakti yoga madhok saje lokasya janato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. Looks like you all know that verse. You just learned that one?
Yeah.
It's a good one for book distributors. People don't know, they're in ignorance. So, Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishne svabdhamo pagate dharma jnana divisa kalo nashta drishamesha. Puranaka udhanoditaha. People are in ignorance, in darkness. So this Bhagavat Purana, the light of the Bhagavat Purana will give them light in the darkness. In the first edition of the Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1, printed in the West, there was an illustration for this verse, which showed some of the prominent activities of Kali Yuga. In the middle of the picture, Vyasadev holding up the Srimad Bhagavatam with light shining down on toward the darkness, which actually this picture was adopted from from a famous old Hollywood movie called The Ten Commandments, which is a picture of Moses holding up the Ten Commandments with the light shining down. Charlton Heston making his contribution in Krishna consciousness. One of the most famous BBT pictures is that of Mother Yashoda holding Krishna, baby Krishna, which is based on one of the most famous masterpieces in the history of the Western world, called Madonna and Child. By who? I don't know who it's painted by. Rembrandt? No, but there's one particular painting called Madonna and Child on which this is based. Raphael, yeah. So there you go. It's 0000. Oh, add Krishna, and it becomes... Although having said all that, I mean, actually, despite the many misconceptions, etc., etc., and of the Christian churches, still, I realized when I went to Thailand that actually it's something overall, it's still something, giving some idea of God, it's something very beneficial for human society. Because Thailand is a hardcore Buddhist country. Hardcore means Theravad or original Shunyavad. There's another major branch of Buddhism, which is Mahayana, which incorporates theistic or semi-theistic concepts. But Theravad is staunchly no God, no existence, no jiva, just Shunyavad. Nit, everything nit. So even though Thai people are famous all over the world as some of the most sensuous people in the world, their theistic or their religious concept is deeply atheistic.
Sensuous
means they're highly dedicated to lives of sense gratification. Not exactly the same thing. I mean, you can be... It's just like Indra is sensuous, but he's not hedonistic. Hedonistic means when there's absolutely no idea of any... Yeah, it's indulgent without any morals or any such thing. So it's very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness, because people, by their culture, not only do they not have any idea of God, but they're actually inimical to the idea that there can be any God. Anyway, we're wandering into another subject here. You all have to go do your welfare work. But these discussions... but these discussions are also important to understand what are we doing. Where's Ambarish? Left already, okay. I was going to ask him, what's the formula that keeps you going year after year after year on book distribution? Often book distributors ask this. Well, the answer is that if we're fully convinced that distributing these books is the best possible activity we can do to help others, and that conviction becomes bolstered by regularly hearing the philosophical understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. Any question about this?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, that's an important point. Then we should always think that devotees are performing the best welfare work by distributing Krishna consciousness. But we should never think, I'm a devotee. We should think, well, I'm just trying to be a devotee. Like people often ask me, well, how long have you been a devotee? And I say, well, I'm still trying. I am a devotee. I'm more glorious than Krishna himself. Who will say that? Not a devotee. We should consider ourselves most fortunate to have the opportunity to be in the association of devotees and to be allowed to take part in this Krishna consciousness movement. How we frame our words can be very helpful for reminding us of our actual, how we should consider ourselves. Yeah, I'll give an example to explain that. How we say it. For instance, someone could say, well, I joined ISKCON 10 years ago. Yeah, you know, I joined ISKCON and, you know, it's very fortunate. The idea might be there that, you know, it's a great fortune for ISKCON that I joined. We could also say that 10 years ago I was so fortunate that the devotees allowed me to join ISKCON. Anything else? Yeah, a devotee, when he hears descriptions of the glories of devotees, thinks, oh, all the devotees are so wonderful. He doesn't start thinking, well, I'm so wonderful. He doesn't start thinking, I'm wonderful.
Yeah,
he thinks, yeah, so
wonderful.
Yeah. And considering the glorious position of devotees, by hearing the glories of devotees, he actually thinks himself more insignificant because he thinks he's so far away from that position himself. And he thinks the devotees are so merciful upon him to allow him to engage in this service for which he's actually not qualified. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jai, all of you ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to your wonderful service, all glories to your going on preaching Krishna consciousness in these difficult circumstances. When you come from India, it's a difference, isn't it, Madan Mohan? People are not so pious. And you see, the book distribution in India it's way ahead of Russia, but then if you consider what you have to do to distribute books in Russia compared to India, it's a great achievement. The biggest book distributor is in Delhi. He's a businessman. He just phones up other businessmen and tells, now you take 5,000 Bhagavad Gitas. And they take... That's also... You can also probably do that in Russia to some extent. No, I'll tell you. I'm not joking. Just last November, one of my disciples in Finland, he was the top book distributor there, Chaitanya Ananda Prabhu. Yeah, Chaitanya Ananda. So he was diagnosed as having cancer, and he had 1 kilo tumor taken out of his body. So during December, he wasn't going out for book distribution. But he got the phone numbers of everyone connected with the movement, and phoned them up and said, I don't know what he said exactly, but he still did a lot of books during the marathon. So you could also, that's also one way you could investigate. I was just thinking a good line for him would be that, I'm dying and maybe you could do something to...